Apple Watch sales stopped just before Christmas because of a patent dispute will resume for now. I'm David Brancaccio. A federal appeals court says Apple Watch models that came off the market the other day can go on sale again, at least for the time being. The watches include health monitoring systems that have been found to infringe on the other guy's patents. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with details.
Yeah, David, that other guy is a California-based company called Masimo. It's a medical device maker. Since 2020, Masimo has been accusing Apple of stealing proprietary technology for reading blood oxygen levels. Now, the long and short of it is that a federal agency ordered Apple to stop selling watches with this disputed technology in it. So last week, Apple took its Series 9 and Ultra 2 watches off shelves, both online and at its physical stores. Other watches were still available, and frankly, other retailers were still selling the disputed watches too. But now, an appeals court is allowing Apple to sell the watches again as well.
And tell me more about Masimo's complaint against Apple.
Well, it says that Apple knew about Masimo's technology since 2013, hired away some of its employees, and recreated that technology. Now, Apple's argument is that it came up with this tech on its own, that it's basic technology that anyone could have figured out. It's not patentable. Apple has made the same argument in another patent dispute over EKG monitoring. This latest dispute went to a jury. The jury deadlocked, and now it's up to a federal appeals court in Washington, D.C. to sort this out, David.
All right, Nova, thank you. The Harvard School of Public Health says that last year, 2022, social media companies brought in $11 billion in revenue from people under 18. Lawmakers and regulators in Washington are scrutinizing the psychological and other health effects of social media on children and the tactics companies use that some experts see as encouraging overuse. The Harvard researchers accuse the companies of failing to self-regulate. Some states are suing. Some argue when it comes to money decisions, use your head, not your heart, that emotions get in the way of clear decision-making. Yet emotions and money are often deeply interconnected, right? Chantel Chapman is a financial expert and former mortgage broker who, despite her resume, did not have the best relationship with money. She ended up creating an educational program focused on the intersection of money, emotions, and pain. It's called Trauma of Money. Chantel spoke with my Marketplace colleague, Sabri Benishour. You should know there are references to addiction in the following conversation.
How does trauma shape our relationship with money?
So we believe at Trauma of Money that any type of trauma that someone experiences has the ability to impact the relationship with money, even if the original trauma had nothing to do with money. At its core, trauma is when something happens or doesn't happen that leaves us feeling unsafe, not secure, or not worthy. And what does money represent in our society? It represents worth and it represents security.
You have your own experience with a troubled relationship with money. How did you figure out or make the connection between, you know, your relationship with money and your own personal experience of trauma?
Someone very close to me was going through addiction recovery. And as I was there showing up for them, I started to notice some similarities with the way I was interacting with money and the way they were interacting with the substance they were using.
Mm.
I felt so connected to this person and I was like, wow, like I'm using money and I'm using my lack of boundaries in order to soothe myself. That is essentially my addiction. And I started going to trauma therapy, but then I would bring up money and the trauma therapist would be like, willpower, willpower. Like, it's almost like they didn't really have any strategies as soon as I brought up money.
I wanted to ask you about the idea of generational trauma or societal trauma and how that pops up in an individual's behavior or approach to money.
When a brain believes it's in scarcity, the brain reacts in a similar way to a trauma response. So we really look at scarcity as another form of trauma. And let's say your ancestors have experienced extreme scarcity. And maybe the children of your great-great-grandparents watch their parents in extreme scarcity and they learn certain ways to be around money. And then they pass that down to their children and pass that down to their children. And so you can have trauma and scarcity passed down through nature and nurture. And we will often see people interact with their money in the same way that was like a taught pattern through their ancestors. And that taught pattern might have come out of survival at one point.
If we are shaped by our experience and the experiences of those around us, how do you get control back?
One of the ways to get control back, ironically, is to depersonalize it. And so when we can say something like, whose financial shame is this right now? And we can start to unpack what the source is. We can say, oh, well, you know, some of this is societal trauma. Like, we live in an environment where there's a massive wealth gap. You know, there's a lot of economic issues and there's a lot of stuff going on. So I get that I have individual control to make some change, but also all of this shame and pressure is not mine. And the moment you can start to depersonalize it, you're giving yourself some space to take a different path.
Chantal Chapman is a financial trauma researcher and the co-founder of Trauma of Money. Chantal, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's my Marketplace colleague, Sabri Benishour. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.